Good day, travellers. Welcome back to Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales. I'm your host, the Tale Teller. Pull up a chair, but dust it off first, though. Everything out here has got a layer of regret on it. Tonight, we're heading into the outback, a place where the sun can tan your bones before your skin catches up. And the locals have started trusting miracle creams, pop-up clinics, and words like ascend and clarity. Never a good sign when the same jar promises youth, weight loss, and external validation. It's the kind of town where gossip travels faster than trucks, and when someone says, "It's just wellness, love," you should probably run. But it's 40 miles to the next town, and your ankles already hum like tuning forks. We've got vanity, ritual, and body horror dressed up in polite customer service. Because what self-improvement without a reflective surface to judge you back? So get comfy, my friends. This one is a slow burner, but pour yourself something that won't curdle in this heat. We're about to meet the good people of Wattle's Rest, a place where youth comes cheap and your body parts have payment plans. Now then, let's take a look inside that clinic, shall we? Chapter 1, The Shed with Promises. The clinic came behind a battered ute with a tarp tied loose enough to slap, each gust turning the plastic into a tired flag. The vehicle turned off the highway like it knew better and didn't care. Took the bend past the grain silos and coughed onto the main street. It parked where the butcher's truck used to park on Saturdays, back when the town had more families and fewer reasons to linger indoors. The ute tailgate dropped with a gravelly bang that sounded like old tools and thin patience. A prefab box stepped down onto the red dirt. Cream siding, cherry logo, a smile painted in a color that did not belong to anything that had ever lived out here. Wattle's Rest watched from shade. The servo's veranda had three plastic chairs with spider cracks, two milk crates flipped over, and a sudden parade of elbows on knees. Sun turned everything hard enough to throw sparks from metal, bull bars, mailboxes, the tin beer sign above the pub's door that never swung right. The air smelled like hot eucalyptus and the sweet rot of something dead, just off the verge. A sourness that waxed and waned as the breeze wandered. Dust hung at ankle height in a red-brown cuff. A fly landed. Then another. They were small facts in a town made of them. Inside the prefab, neatness waited. A row of digital scales blinked soft blue, numbers sleeping, services wiped harder than anything was ever wiped in Wattle's Rest. A steel table purred, a small cold through the room, scratches in its brush surface told stories about knives and carcasses, not here but somewhere else where work happened. Under bright lights and music. There were amber glass jars on a shelf. The labels were written in a tidy script that held no jokes. Youth, burn, clarity, ascend. Each jar was sealed with a rubber stopper and a metal clasp so clean a person could see their face bent in it. A plastic skeletal model stood in the corner. Bones the color of a healthy tooth, every piece labeled with black letters that looked like they would hold even as the heat turned stickers to wax. A ledger lay open on a clipboard. The paper smelled faintly of chlorine and ink, the way bank forms do. A pen sat across the top page, aligned to the margin like a carpenter sets a spirit level. Next to the ledger, there were pamphlets with glossy photos, smooth-limbed bodies that belonged to places where water came out of taps clear and cold, faces with teeth so white they went bluish at the edges. The fonts curled in cream, promising verbs instead of nouns. Titan, smooth, shed, glow. In this town, verbs had mostly been grunt and prey. Out back, past a water tank with a dent the size of a dog's skull, and a stand of weeds gone brittle with dehydration, a shallow pit steamed. It wasn't much. A lowered oval with a lip of tampered dirt and a halo of salt crystals that winked like fish scales. The steam curled, sure as breath from a sleeping mouth. On a boarding pallet, a sack of fat candles slouched under a tarp. They were the same pale as the jars and the mottled bones. And every flaw in their sides had caught a bit of dust and kept it. The tarp lifted at the corners. Flies took an interest. Arrived, left, arrived again. The town did its counting. There were needs here that had been tallying themselves for decades. Hips that had carried children and fed sacks. Joints that had learned the name of the coming weather. Skin laid down in layers of sun and work until it wore like memory. Money came in as thin as skim milk and left as quick as vapor of a hot spoon. Cameras in phones made people into the kind of proof no one needed. The proof had not been flattering. The clinic's smile sat there and waited for introductions. The practitioner arrived a minute later, stepping down from the ute in linen trousers that resisted dust and a shirt the color of rain that did not come. The glove snapped on with a sound like a rubber band twanged against a wrist. The face behind the sunglasses was orderly. The eyes moved the way someone's do when they're measuring a room they intend to rearrange. Wall, light source, exits. The mouth did what a mouth should do when work is about to begin. That mouth stayed closed. The scales were switched on. The room filled with a gentle electronic hum that didn't match anything else in Wattle's rest. A citrus clean smell woke under the heat inhaled. A plug found its socket. Something beeped in a heartbeat pattern and then waited. The practitioner wrote today's date in the ledger, small and even. The ink sunk into the paper grain and dried without smudging. The fan in the corner clicked each time it swung past a certain angle, a little apology that never came with a fix. Outside, tires popped over the cat's eyes at the slow end of town. Heads lifted. The first curious bodies crossed the baked road with hands in pockets and eyes leveled halfway between friendliness and caution. The kind of walk you bring to a yard with a chained dog. Boots thumped up the prefab steps in ones and twos. The door wheezed open and shut on a hinge that would never see oil. Inside, the heat slid out through the air conditioner's thin, brave grate, and then clawed its way back in. The clinic tried to be a climate where it wasn't. People read the jars. Youth, burn, clarity, ascend. They were words with good taste on the tongue. Youth was something people remembered by accident, its smells and songs and how long it took to get up off the ground. Burn was what the sun did to the back of the neck, but here it promised a different kind of reduction, the kind you could see in numbers. Clarity had its own sparkle. Think better, sleep through, wake without grit in the eyes or doubt in the throat. Ascend was a church word with the church cut out. It sounded like being seen from below and from above. Hands touched the brochures. Thumbs left no prints. The practitioner answered every question that wasn't asked by pointing to numbers and charts laminated in thick plastic. A simple package menu hung on the wall, bullet points like fence posts. Weight correction, aesthetic optimization, financial amplification, visibility enhancement. There were asterisks that led to smaller writing that no one felt like squinting to read. There were before and after photos with differences so measurable they felt kind, the way a meter of fencing feels neat even when it's cutting a paddock into shapes. A woman with calves like tree roots set her shopping bag down and stood on the scale. The scale blinked, sighed, and named her weight. She looked to see if the number arrived with a tone. It did not. The practitioner wrote a figure beside her name in the ledger and drew a small line beneath it like a promise not to go backward. The woman clicked her tongue once. She would come back. Everyone came back. To the servo, to the butcher before it closed, to the school on Tuesday when the kids had sport, to the pub when heat and silence made two people feel like four, to the routines that built themselves around gaps. Behind the clinic, the pit steamed. The heat off it was gentle. An exhale through parted lips, a steel bucket rested on a cinder block, and the block pressed a thumbprint into the dirt. The salt crust sparkled and then dulled as a thin skin formed over the damp. A single long hair lay caught in the rim. too dark and strong to be from one of the town's old ewes. Ants sent a scout, found nothing sweet enough to merit a line, and went back to their business under the concrete slab where the clinic steps landed. In the shadow of the water tank, a lizard flattened itself into a sickle of shade and thought lizard thoughts that never included the future. The town's future took stock. Money was being spent here and might stay for a day before it went where money always goes. A flyer on the notice board outside the post office showed a grin stacked with standard issue teeth, a grin you had to believe in a little or it would be insulting. The staples had trapped a fly wing at one corner, brown membrane flashing a rainbow when the angle was right. The paper promised introductory rates and loyalty rewards. The font said nothing bad would happen, not because bad things don't happen, but because bad things are for other places. The practitioner unpacked a crate and stacked the contents with the same attention a farmer gives to the last bales before the storm hits. Rubber tubing coiled into nests, gauze squares the size of postcards slept in plastic bags. There was a small stone bowl wrapped in a towel, the kind that would look normal in a kitchen until the wrong liquid filled it. The towel came away damp along its fold. The bowl went on the steel table and made a sound like a cup set beside a sink at midnight when no one wants to wake a house. People drifted in and out. Someone came in for ice and left with a pamphlet in the crook of their arm. A teenager with sunburned ears hovered, counting his coins in his pocket the way a person might touch a lucky charm. Two men from the haulage yard stood just inside the door pretending to be cooler than they were. Arms crossed, back sleeved with the shadow of sweat leaking through a t-shirt cotton. A magpie cut the sky in half and threw its call into the heat. Too clear for comfort. By late afternoon, the ledger showed lines, names that anyone could place to houses and dogs and debts. The practitioner set a paper cone in the mouth of a bin and poured a measured cup of coarse salt through it. A slow, soft hiss, like a radio between stations. The fan clicked. The air conditioner braved another centimeter cooler and failed. Someone's phone vibrated against a belt buckle and then lay still. The town's wants had found a new drawer to place themselves in. The sun rolled. The dun light of evening flattened everything to the same value, and the shadow from the silos cut across the clinic's walls like a mark on a gauge. It would be dusk soon, and dusk forgives. It softens the looks of the cracks in corners and the stains in concrete and the gap between what was promised and what could be. The street thinned. A final pickup with a toolbox in its tray rattled past and went quiet down the outer road. The last cockatoo took off noisily and then resigned itself to distance. The practitioner closed the clipboard and slid it under the steel table where the dust couldn't find it and the ants wouldn't care. The gloves came off, turned inside out, and nested in a small white bin that would never fill to the top. The scales went dark one by one, a polite bedtime. The jars on the shelf kept their secrets in amber, and the labels kept their tone. Youth, burn, clarity, ascend. Each word wore its certainty like a pressed shirt. Out back, the pit breathed. A line was dragged through the salt lip with the toe of a shoe and then tidied with a palm. The candles under the tarp sweated a little and then stopped, as if remembering themselves. Night arrived as it always does here. Too fast for people from cooler places, slow enough for those who know how to watch it. The clinic's doors took time closing. The hinge squealed, then thought better of it. Across the street, the servo's fluorescent tube flickered, gained courage and held. Moths made their rounds like tired shoppers. The town settled into the grooves it had made for itself over a long, dry season. In the new groove, there was a shed with promises and a ledger with names. That was all. That was enough to pull the center of the place half a step towards something it pretended to recognize. On the far side of the silos, the highway shouted and then went quiet. Heat lifted from the road in a breath that tasted of tar and distant fires. The moon came up looking like a coin lost under a couch, scuffed and good to hold between finger and thumb. Somewhere, a generator coughed into life. The clinic's sign glowed, a tidy rectangle of light pressing itself flat against the dark. It said what it had to say all day. It said it to no one and everyone. By the time the last veranda light clicked off and the crickets took over from the birds. The pit had ceased steaming. A thin skin had formed over the damp, like a scab over a cut that didn't hurt yet. The salt held. The ground set its jaws. The town slept the way it always did, on one side, then the other. Dreams full of small chores and abandoned paddocks, and the feeling of lifting something too heavy alone. The shed dreamed too. If a shed can dream of numbers sliding downward, of faces smoothed, of their history, of candles burning clean and casting a light no insect could stand. The practitioner slept in a motel room with the aircon rattling, shoes under the chair. A towel rolled along the gap at the bottom of the door to keep the corridor's smell out. The ledger, quiet under the steel table, kept its new weight. It would be a long season. The town had time. The clinic had a system. The night, as always, took both without complaint. Chapter 2. The Circle and the Mirror. Dusk sloped down the paddocks and pulled behind the clinic like sump oil. The heat went out of the air with the suddenness of a tap turned, leaving a thin skin of cool that made the hair on forearms lift and then lie down again. Moths took over the sky's small work, their powdery bodies pacing the lanterns in tight figure eights, dusting the glass with a film that turned the light to soup. In town, verandas coughed up their occupants and the pub let out its first wave. Here, behind the prefab, the ground had been raked smooth as pastry and drawn on. Chalk marked a ring in the red dirt, the line thick as a thumbprint and salted until it glittered like spilled sugar. Someone had tampered the soil hard with a board, leaving a flatness that did not belong to this land's usual wind scour and hoof stomp. The circle looked like a lid set on a pot that had been bubbling too long. Inside it, tarps lay folded like flags, olive drab, with corners weighted by bricks that had learned to be useful again after decades of being just stone. A crate of cord sat open. They were the colour of old bandages and smelled faintly of soap and tallow. A kitchen memory blend that made the teeth feel dry. The practitioner worked without hurry. Linen sleeves rolled, wrists pale and precise, gloves creaking only once as they settled into the grooves of the hands they covered. The ledger came out of the makeshift table, a sheet of plywood across two drums whose paint had peeled in long curls, names weighted in a straight column, each with a box next to it for a number, and another box for the symbol that meant paid. The pen was neat and black. It left tracks that looked like decisions. People arrived in singles and pairs, work shirts still stiff with the day, dresses that had tried to be good against sun and sweat and failed by centimeters, caps with salt rings, faces with a mapped overlook of folks spent more hours outdoors than in. They kept their voices low without agreeing to, and stopped just short of the salt lip, like cattle feeling the current through a fence. The clinic's front room still hummed. The back had a different pitch. It was the sound of a generator, almost, but not quite within its limits. A kitchen blower, a distant hive. A stone bowl sat at the circle's navel. It wasn't pretty. Thick, grey, shallow, with a lip that had lost a chip and kept going. Beside it lay a stack of bills, softened 20s and 50s, a few hunter's hundreds cracked to butter edges by wallets, rubber banded into small sheaves like fat green cigars. The practitioner unbranded one, teased the notes loose, and shredded them with a quick wrist and a knife the size of a butter spreader. Shreds went in, a handful at a time, an assistant no one could account for, the kind of youth who belonged to every town and none, brought a lighter, one of those clear-body disposables with a dancing flame the colour of cheap spirits. The paper caught. Money burned like something ashamed of itself, hot, fast, with a smoke that carried a metallic twang that brought old coins to the tongue and a copper roof to the mind. The breeze thought about shifting to carry it away and decided to lay down instead. From a cooler came a jar labelled Eden. It was a heavy kind of glass that threw thick shadows. Inside, the leeches floated, black like apostrophes unspooling into question marks as the jar walked. When the lid came off, they breathed the new air in a collective, slow excitement, and the water kinked around them, as if flexing. The jar went to the top. Sun-damaged arms, freckled shins, the river lines of old scars that ran pale as string beneath brown. All were offered the way old wounds offered themselves to weather, with resignation and a little hope. The first leech slid onto the skin with a purpose that made the surrounding flesh want to move away and couldn't. It found a place just above a sunspot and settled. Others found wrists, temples, the ridge of collarbones. They pulsed once, twice, got their grip. The feeling wasn't pain. It was a tug. An old drawer opening from the inside, a suction that asked and then took. People watched their own bodies grow useful. Blood knew its job and did it without checking with the mind. The black commas swelled to plumper punctuation, ellipses sliding toward periods. Cords were measured from the crate and placed across ankles. A dab of wax greased the knot, which pressed in like a thumb onto a dough that wasn't for bread. The wax's smell shifted from kitchen to something else, a faint pharmacy cleanliness, a memory of tile and steel and the sensation of being watched from above by fixed glassy eyes. Wrist loops went on next, loose enough to allow circulation, tight enough to assert they were not ornaments. The cords lay against pulse points and learned their beats, sinking to a steady low hum that came up from the dirt itself. Those who had come for weight stood on a battered scale dragged from the clinic's front room and placed on flattened ground. The numbers rang politely. The ledger received their testimony in columns. Those who had come for money opened their hands and let coins slide into the stone bowl to metal bite against burning paper. A mixed sacrifice that hissed and crackled like plans. Those who had come for fame, nobody said the word. Tilted faces toward the practitioner's brush. Ground mica lifted by a soft fan settled on cheekbones and eyelids, a dust that found the smallest creases and turned them into tiny roads of light. The sheen looked like it did on fish sides when a catch is fresh and the sun has just started to die for the day. The mirror waited. It had been there the whole time, but everyone managed not to look at it by the kind of collective decision that keeps roadsides free of certain litter. It wasn't a household thing. It didn't lean on a bedroom wall, once flanked by posters and now framed by laundry. It didn't recall a dressing table and the trio of bulbs. It stood on an old mahogany stand that had no business out here. Its oval glass foxed at the edges in the way of things that have traveled too far in and out of weather. The silver behind the glass was pitted and bruised. In its face, the lanterns doubled and the moths tripled until it looked like a fogged constellation that somebody had pressed into a glucose sheet. The practitioner circled the chalk edge with the stony attention of a man checking fencing by torch at 2 a.m. and finding the same gap he fixed last week. The line held, the salt crusted, the name on the ledgers reached the page's end and bent into the next with the same steadiness as a water pipeline crossing a dry gully. The assistant retrieved something from the crate that might have been a simple bellows or might have been an old tool for stoking the mouth of a dying stove. Its leather had been rubbed with tallow until it gave the hand a grateful squeak. With a patient rhythm, the assistant pushed air onto the bowl's surface, keeping the burn truthful, coaxing ember to coal and coal to ash. Heat rose. It had a dampness to it. A kitchen exhale rather than a paddock bake. The pit beyond the circle steamed its patient's breath. Salt outlined the lip, old fat in the soil, invisible to the eye, released a ghost of odor that found a person's throat before their nose. It wasn't rancid. It wasn't sweet. It was recognition. This is the fuel of what you want. Moths fell. The circle did not admit them. The practitioner lifted his hands, not high and not as if to claim ownership, but the way a man lifts his hands before he begins to work on something that bites. A wire, a fence, a high-tension line. The cords woke at that, just a fraction. The hum in them deepened in the notch where the ear meets skull. On ankles and wrists, the fibers tightened by a degree that newspapers would not consider newsworthy. Pulses checked themselves, then found their stride again. The leech's mid-gorge flexed as though the flesh beneath had become a richer pasture. The mirror changed slowly, enough that several people told themselves later that they had seen it beginning. The foxing around the edge drew together as if pulled by a breath. The mottling congealed into shapes the mind shed from naming. Not letters, but the idea of letters. Not faces, but the weight distribution of faces known and expected. The lanterns in the glass moved apart like curtains opening onto a smaller room, laid over the night. The surface held the dark the way a dam holds water, flexing, containing, promising. Inside the circle, tarps unfurled. The assistants spread them smooth and the weights settled. A smear of pale wax thumbed onto a cord at each knot, upping friction and smell. On the tarps, folks lay down the way you lie down at a doctor's order, mouth closed, eyes on something nobody else could see, bodies rigid with cooperation. The heat under the plastic rose and condensed into a dew that wasn't exactly sweat. It gathered at backs and shoulder blades, and the small of the spine in milky beads that looked like cream descending against itself. The practitioner fetched a small alloy bowl and a whisk more at home in a kitchen than a clinic. Coated wires chipped in the handle. From a jar marked youth came a spoon of translucent jelly, a gel that trembled on the air and then held fast. From a jar marked clarity came a pinch of sugar-sized crystals that ticked when they hit the metal, a sound like a rain that wasn't there. A slice off of one of the candles, nothing dramatic, a curl of tallow no bigger than a fingernail, fell into the mix and the whisk turned. The bend went cloudy, then clear, then took on the faintest tint, the colour of milk when the baby's eaten well and the mother has had nothing but tea. The smell was tender. The assistant dipped a brush and carried the bowl to the tarps. They painted the mixture in deliberate bands across foreheads, sternums, lower bellies, kneecaps, ankle bones, the places where custom remembers virtue lives, the hinge points where bodies declare their age. The gel cooled the skin by degree. Beneath, the leeches continued the old work with new approval. The cords learned these locations and gave back pressure in soft pulses that matched, at a lower pitch, the hum in the ground and the breath in the mirror. From the clinic's doorways, the scales watched with their dead blue eyes. Their cords ran interior, not exterior, plugging into walls that gave them numbers to pass along like gossip. In this light, they became silent witnesses, tallying loss without weight, gain without calories, everything a calibration. The ledger's paper warmed beneath the practitioner's palm. Ink lines lay as flat as tracks on brittle soil. The pen tapped once. The only nerves sound in a place that had decided nerves were an error of planning. As the bowl in the center breathed its metal out, and the shreds went to ash, the mirror's surface deepened. It did not reflect so much as overlay. The circle in the glass matched the circle on the ground, but the people in it were 3 degrees cleaner of line, 4 degrees fairer of light. It was a small improvement, of the kind that makes people sell tractors and marriages. The hair was shinier, the skin cooler to the eye. The same tired bodies lay there, but a little better. Not different, better. The difference was all the difference in the world. The shift spread like a cool, poured into hot iron. Ankles found a new position where bones sat more certain under skin. Wrists sighed small, the leeches drank and the bodies fed them. The gel dried to attack that glued pores flat. In the circle's scrubbed dirt, a slow pool gathered under the tarp's edge. An off-white runoff, thicker than sweat, less sour than milk turned. A substance with no place in town vocabulary. It slithered toward the salt line and hardened there into a crust, pearly sheen, like candle drippings on a church rail that no one owned up to making. Above, the bodies hovering in the glass, the better edits breathed in time with the real. The moths broke and remade themselves against the lanterns. The assistant fed the burn, a last palm of torn money. It went up grudgingly. The practitioner laid a flat hand on the ledger and felt the town's heartbeat come through the cardboard backing and the plywood and the drums and the dirt. It wasn't magic to think of it that way. It was accounting. 23 named on the page with room for more. 23 pulses in the chords, 23 slow expansions in the glass where Foxing had become stars. The wind climbed over the silo's roofline and made a sound like a jacket zipper opening on a cold morning. The mirror's surface took that sound and turned it into a long, bright line across nothing, a runway across a paddock that had never seen a plane. It lasted a breath and went. The circle hummed the tune of waiting. The town matched it because the town had done a lifetime of waiting and knew the harmony already. When the hour found its bottom, the practitioner raised one finger and the assistant began to untie. Ankle, wrist, ankle, wrist. Wax lifted off with the knots and stayed on cord in pale commas. The cords relaxed enough to lie, to rest, to pretend they were rope. The leeches released on their own accord with a little wet sound like coins parting from fingers at a sausage sizzle. They were plump and tired, content as a dog under a ute. The gel on the skin flaked at the edges and fell away in translucent scurf that the wind arranged into tiny drifts. People rose. Their faces said little and their bodies said less, but the scales, dragged back into view, plugged into the night like a radio, recorded numbers that were not the same as the ones that had been. The ledger had room for another column and received it. The practitioner did not smile. The work had not yet been priced. The ground remembered where each body had lain and warmed there after they moved. The pool at the salt lip hardened to a crescent ridge. The moth dust on the lanterns thickened to a mask. The stone bowl held a layer of ash that the assistant, with a respect not given to many things out there, tipped into a canvas bag. The bag went into a crate that closed on oil hinges. The crate developed a weight out of proportion to its contents without any fuss. The circle's chalk line received a pass with a brush, the kind you use on floors that nobody will notice until they do. A new salt was sprinkled, the seam in the dirt smoothed, the mirror yawned the way ovens do when the heat drops, and a cake decides whether to fall or not. Its surface clouded, the improvement dimmed, as if a hand had been drawn diagonally across a fogged pane. Not gone, only folded. The lanterns reclaimed themselves. The moths had found a new priority, the floodlight over the back door, where heat had come free and steady. People left the way they'd came, singles and pairs, weight on their heels, attention inside their clothes. Boots scuffed chalk. No one apologized for it. The night took on the quality of a cool drink after a day that didn't deserve one. Tires hissed on dirt. Taps clicked in kitchens up the road. Television glow appeared and went in rectangles. The clinic's front room hummed its medical hum. The back became a yard again, briefly, until it wouldn't be. The practitioner wiped the whisk, wrapped it, labeled a bag. The ledger closed. The pen lined itself with the clipboard's edge. The crate with the bag of ash slid under the table. The assistant gathered the cords, coiled them into obedient spirals, knuckles pressing them flat with intimacy. The tarps folded wrong at first, then remembered their creases and obeyed. The mirror got a sheet over it, the way you do for furniture after a death. The sheet took on the oval shape as if a modest body stood affronted under it, as if to say, "We're finished for tonight and not sorry." Up past the clinic, the silos darkened to perfect voids. A single long car took the highway at speed and wrote a line of white light that burned on the eye, long after the car had gone. A cool desert smell moved over the dirt, carrying with it iron and sleep. The circle held, invisible now unless you knew where to stand and squint. The pit exhaled, a last warm breath, a pot taken off the boil and set carefully to the side for later. In beds and on couches and on recliners, too embarrassed to be called beds, Wattle's rest turned from the left hip to the right and back. The bodies noted themselves, the scales in the bathroom corners and under wardrobes made a private chime as if something elsewhere had asked the question and they had just discovered the answer. The first dreams arrived, full of clean floors and light that never told what time it was, full of stages that didn't squeak and cameras that didn't smudge, full of feeling lighter and taller and truer than a person has any right to feel. And behind the clinic, beneath the sheet and the salt and the modest dark, the oval surface did not sleep. It held the way a thrown lasso holds, an idea in the air for a long, dangerous second before anyone knows for sure whether it's going to land. Chapter 3. Bodies as Payment Plans. Morning cut the town into clean shapes. The light was the color of bone scrubbed with bleach, clinical and indifferent, revealing the edges of things. Corrugations on silos, scored rubber on truck tires, pores on faces that had spent decades under the sun forgetting they were made of apertures. The clinic smelled like lemon over steel. The scales woke with their flat blue eyes. The stone bowl on the plywood table took a test breath and answered itself with a thin metal ring. The assistant set the cords in nested loops, each loop exactly the size of the last, a progression proof. They had learned the town's wrists. They had learned the town's ankles. They would now learn more. People arrived pared down by ambition. Soft talking in the way people do around engines and altars, an arrangement took shape as naturally as a grid, named in a ledger, bodies on tarps, cords at pulses, gel in the bright lines across their bodies, at hinge points, forehead, sternum, belly, kneecaps, clavicles. The jar labeled Eden released its commas. The leeches kissed, attached, pulsed, black strokes on a paper the body thought it had finished writing on. At first, the changes were familiar. Cheekbones rose a few millimeters, thighs ironed flat, ankles trimmed to pleasing, precise ovals. Then the grid appeared. It started on the hauler's left forearm. The pores there, sun-scarred and unequally spaced by time, began to organize. Not smaller, not larger, corrected. They drifted into a lattice with the calm of dust settling on an unused bench. In seconds, the randomness went smooth. Each pore found an equal neighbor at the exact same interval, like fence posts measured by a surveyor who does not forgive slope. The skin did not redden. It did not swell. It simply decided to agree with geometry. The assistant noticed first and did nothing. Noticing was not his job. On the butcher's window, the same thing happened along the jawline under the ear. The grain of the skin squared itself. Her hand went up by memory and stopped halfway, palm hushing itself midair. She could feel the alignment as a cooling, as if fine threads had been combed and laid side by side under the surface. The mirror breathed. The pores inside it were already arranged and waiting. Across backs and bellies, a quiet pattern spread. Freckles gathered into constellations that repeated from person to person, like the same night sky pinned under different roofs. Scar tissue flattened a degree. It no longer bulged. Instead, it slipped into the grid as if coded for it and had simply been waiting for the update. The leeches pulsed in symphony. To a timing, no one spoke. The chords hummed in a pitch you felt in molars first. Sweat arrived late and wrong. It did not bead. It extruded in perfect droplets. Identical hemispheres set at identical distances. A dotted line obeying rules written elsewhere. On tarps, the dots rolled into margins and met. When they touched, they did not smear. They clicked together like magnets and formed white lozenges, like the segments inside an orange. Clean and arguable. The assistant skimmed the tidy pellets with a putty knife into a labeled tin, Render 4. The sound they made was not wet. It was the thin, dry clink of pills in a jar. Teeth whitened beyond marketing. The blue edge came and went, then settled as a constant, a spectral halo that revealed every angle the mirror wanted. The enamel squared its microchip, smoothed its micro cracks. When a person smiled, the uniformity extended further than teeth. The lips understood and traced the same curve every time, an obedient arc. The teenager, the one who knew how to count the invisible as currency, practiced 3 smiles in succession. The third matched the first exactly, to the millimeter. He swallowed. His tongue, newly heavy, made a soft click against the grid of his palate, finding new grooves that felt like vents. At the chalk lip of the circle, the white runoff, those magnet pellets, now resoftening, settled into tessellations, hexagons, efficient, no wasted space. The salt accepted the pattern the way dim ground accepts rain that knows where to go. Within minutes, a pale honeycomb had formed around the circle, thin-walled, exact. A moth landed in a cell and struggled against edges too straight to forgive legs. The struggle stopped. The cell held. The practitioner whisked jelly from youth, crystalline clarity, a shaving from a candle, until it went from translucent to perfectly translucent. The air caught in it, organizing its bubbles, identical in size, distance, and speed. And on the brush, it did not drool, it thinned to a film that laid across the sternum in the intercostal spaces with the exactness of a stencil. Between ribs, the breath printed itself, exhaled, a grid compressing, inhale, a grid expanding. The mirror matched it, a millisecond ahead, like the copy your printer makes before the page you ordered arrives. When the mirror turned its face, the runway did not blaze. It defined. The edges sharpened until stepping onto its reflection felt safer than stepping onto dirt with its uncertain give. In the glass, people became measurements fulfilled, limbs extended to prescribed lengths, knees tracked over toes in dead center lines. The micro-wobbles that made human walking human flattened to curves of textbook grace. You could imagine drawings overlaid, angles, ratios, tick marks that declared correct. The real bodies followed reflexively. A hauler's clavicle ratcheted forward a notch with that rope over Capstan Creek. The pitch was familiar, but the amplitude had changed. Precise, clean, repeatable. The butcher's widow lengthened through the femurs in fractions, consistent on both sides, left and right, kept in consultation by a principle rather than mercy. Cheeks smoothed from inside as though a hand, gloved, exact, had pressed a flat edge against the flesh and squeegeed irregularity toward the hairline. The cords tugged in increments, like a ratchet strap adjusting a load. Click, hold. Click, hold. On the tarps, milky fluid began to exit from pores in dotted arrays. Not seams, not tearing, no gore. The body opened politely along the template it had agreed to. The dots gathered, merged without smear into hex cells, drifted to the lip and locked to the growing honeycomb. Weight left the town and became structure. You could measure it now. You could count the cells. The assistant did. 216 around the first ring. He wrote the number in small block letters on the tin and closed the lid. Side effects proved themselves to be systems and not accidents. Tongues redistributed weight along their length until each syllable took the same time to travel within their clear mouth. The town's drawl regularized. Earlobes developed a consistent softness, a degree of translucency you could read a lantern through, as if the body had decided ears would now carry light too. Ankles chimed less and then more, the note finding one pitch the way a room sometimes finds a frequency it enjoys. On tile, steps rang like small ceramic bells, repeating themselves down aisles. The clinic's front room contributed its own order. The anatomy model's labels, humerus, ulna, mandible, seemed darker. The scales switched on, all read 0.0, before any foot hit them. The zeros crisp as the end of instructions. The ledger's line straightened as if the paper had been ruled more firmly overnight. When the practitioner wrote, the columns accepted ink without feathering, edges severe. Fame arrived as geometry. The teenager's camera learned his face again, but faster, locking onto eyes that mirrored enough light to make focus trivial. On the screen, his features became a set of solvable problems. The algorithm purred. Online, the numbers didn't just go up, they increased in steps, satisfying stair steps, flat, then surge, like a heart finding a metronome. People in town smiled at him at the exact same angle the mirror taught, each photo fit inside a grid without cropping. Outside, the silos stayed blank in a day. But if you looked with the wrong part of your mind, you could see where light would go tonight, aligned to corrugations that weighted like paper with dots ready to be connected. Birds rode thermals that sliced in parallel. Ant lines along the slab broke their chaos into lanes. Fence shadows fell in undramatic agreement post to post. Then midday, the first misalignment, the hauler's shoulder, the one that had popped and seated before, balked. Not with pain, with refusal. The clavicle had advanced in those perfect clicks and found its new stop. The scapula considered the geometry and stayed dumb. The body had become a machine, misreading one, drawing by a millimeter. The cords tugged once, persuasive. The shoulder answered with a tremor shaped like a square. It passed. He did not breathe for 3 seconds and then did. Hard, as if remembering manually. Others had their squares. The butcher's widow lifted a glass of water and watched the meniscus climb and flatten along the rim, searching for center, finding it perfectly. Not once, but again and again under her hand, the teacher's handwriting turned to blueprints, right angles where loops belonged. She pressed her pen down for an O and drafted a rectangle that refused to be round. She set the pen aside and the grid on the pad remained faintly visible without ink. By late afternoon, the town made a new sound, a low, many-throated thrumming. If you stood near the circle, you could hear it in the chords, in the mirror, in the stone bowl where money had already surrendered to ash and ash to arrangement. The honeycomb at the lip of the pit had grown 3 tiers. Each cell stood uniform and without drama, pale and semi-translucent, strength from pattern rather than mass. A breeze from the highway skimmed over and played a note across the edges like a mouth on a bottle's lip. It was almost pleasant. The practitioner, who had said few words all day and meant fewer, tapped the ledger with one finger. The assistant understood. He carried the Eden jar to shade, stroked one gloved fingertip across the glass. Inside, the commas reformed into commas again, sentences for later. The gel bowl shone its clear, implacable sheen. The brush lay still with bristles aligned like soldiers on parade. When the mirror closed for the day, it did not blur, it pixelated. The runway resolved into smaller and smaller rectangles until it was all rectangles, and then it was only glass, and then only the idea of glass. The way your eyes see the grid in a window screen after you've stared too long. People packed their bodies carefully, like borrowed equipment. They moved with simple efficiency, as if straight lines had always been their preference and rounding corners a childish indulgence. The clinic locked. The pit exhaled fat breath, slow and warmer than air. The honeycomb remained. It would not melt back to formlessness. The assistant tried an edge with a fingernail and found it would rather snap than smear. He tested a cell with the flat of the putty knife and watched the break run straight to the next 6 joints and no further. A perfect failure contained by design. Night arranged itself without drama. The silos lit, faces rose, tidier, cleaner, each a gridded map of features that made cameras applaud in their quiet way. In lounge rooms up and downtown, screens matched the projections, and for a few minutes there was more face than landscape in Wattle's Rest. The ankle chime synchronized with the projector fan, and then with the refrigerator, and then with the highway. The song was not soothing, it was precise. In bed, the butcher's widow lay on her side and placed her palm on her jaw, feeling for warmth, for pulse, for the resolution of pores under skin. She found the grid through the flesh like mesh under plaster. The feeling didn't frighten her. It made her think of order, of tins labeled and stacked in a pantry against the summer that would not forgive mistakes. In the motel, the practitioner sat on the bed and rolled his wrist until the tendons pronounced themselves. He pressed a thumb into a point and watched the skin whiten in a clean circle, then refilled the color evenly in all directions at once. A ripple without bias. He smiled and did not. At the back lot, moonlights turned to honeycomb to a tray of sacramental wafers no one would ever receive. Moths slept in their cells. Antennae curled like punctuation. The mirror wore its sheet and did not move. The cords slept in coils that recalled their day perfectly, loop for loop. The town's hunger, which had been a noise, had become a shape. It would be easy to carry. It would be difficult to put down. And that, dear listeners, brings us to the end of The Wellness Pit. So far, we've walked through a town where the sun never blinks, where beauty is sold in jars with tidy little fonts, and where the price of perfection comes measured in skin. 3 chapters in, and Wattle's Rest has learned a new gospel. That youth is currency, pain is optional, and if the mirror likes you enough, it'll start making improvements all by itself. We've seen the shed open its doors like a promise. We've seen the townsfolk weighed, scrubbed, and rewritten. And we've watched as every pore, every smile, every breath found its place inside someone else's idea of symmetry. That's the real horror, isn't it? Not the blood, not the ritual, but the bargain. Because what's more terrifying than realizing you paid for the thing that's taking you apart and called it self-care. Now then, before we close the clinic for tonight, a few thank yous to the brave souls who keep this show alive, the ones who survive mortal rest by pure spirit alone. My first Patreon supporter, friend of mine, and awesome, awesome O-Night Tea Titan, is the majestic, the legendary Matto Star, a man with an eye sharper than any scalpel in that prefab shed. He'd notice the first crack in the mirror, the wrong rhythm in the hum, and he'd know instantly that the clinic's perfection was off by one beat. Matto sees people the way an architect sees a skyline, understanding every hidden joint, every fragile balance holding us up. And he hears us too, the music beneath the noise, the little human chords that makes our horrors sing. If Wattle's Rest had listened to him, they'd have built better foundations and maybe a door that locked from the inside. A huge, huge thank you, you absolute superstar, Matto. Thanks for being my friend, supporting me and the show, and I hope you have an absolutely, positively brilliant week ahead. And rest assured, I am loving the comments in my Patreon posts. I really do appreciate it, legend. Thank you for being so damn fantastic. You'll be hearing from me very, very soon. And now onto my white tea warlords, the trio I'd want beside me when the mirror starts taking attendance. Lesosaurus Rex, forged from iron and endorphins. The kind of person who look at those cores and ask if they come in heavier resistance bands. If strength was a currency, you'd own the entire pit, Lesser. Thank you so, so much for being brilliant, being my pal, and supporting the show. I am keen to hear what you got up to for your Halloween, Lesser. And my next white tea warlord, Maya, Queen of the Cats. You'd spot the ritual long before it started. 9 lives and none wasted on nonsense like Ascend. The mirror would see its reflection in your stare and blink first. Maya, thank you so much for your support. Have an absolute wonderful week ahead of you, and thanks for being my pal. And for my next white tea warlord, Sangeetha the Seer, our lighthouse in the fog. You'd read the salt patterns for what they are, warnings, not decorations, and told the rest of us when to run, though we probably wouldn't listen until it was too late. Sangeetha, thank you so much for your support, your friendship, and have an absolutely legendary week ahead here. Thank you so, so much, mate. Together with the Elgrain forces and my listeners, all of you keep this podcast a-bubbling along. And on that note, I do want to thank my Patreon supporters in the Earl Grey tea and all tiers after. I am lucky to have Chad Warren, Peter Raffaelli, Just Heather, Juicebox Andy, Divided by Zero, Paige Kramer, Seductive Smiles, Jane Gumnick, and Michael Grupp. Thank you all immensely for your support. And just a reminder, all Patreons get an each episode 1 week earlier at a higher bit rate, so you can hear my voice even crisper. And tiers above Earl Grey get callouts in every single episode. Remember, friends, if someone promises to make you perfect, check what they're charging before you say yes. Perfection is the oldest pyramid scheme in the world, and the mirror always gets its cut. Until next time, keep your reflections polite, your salt circles unbroken, and your stories just this side of human. Because next week, we're continuing the story of the wellness bit. Until next we meet.
Closing hand, clinic rolled in on a rusted van. with jars of promised light in the skin. Step right up, share what you've been. Ledger open, a prairie in blue. Scale hums a note, the body new. Heat and hunger, making deals. Dust remembers, but the mirror heals. We're walking the mirror line, face to face with what we've signed. Salt and promise pour and shine down in waters rest where youth don't die. It just changes size. Each poor range like grains of wheat. No blood, no sweat, just symmetry's beat. A preacher's voice in a doctor's tone. Ascend it, said, and call it your own. We traded scars for something bright. We paid in flesh and slept all night. We're walking the mirror line, trading soul for straight design. Counting losses, calling them fine. Down in waddles rest where youth don't die. It just changes sides. Hear the hum. Every eye a perfect match. Hear the hum. Every name a printed badge. Hear the the numbers in the glass, still smiling, still looking back. Hear the skin like marble, hearts like clay. We thank the light it takes away. What's human bends, what's left will stay forever framed in yesterday. We walk in the mirror line. Pretty ghost in borrowed time. The scales still blink, the pit still shines. Down in waddles rest, we left our way behind. The mirror breathed, the night exhaled. We called it health, we called it faith. If beauty's God, then sin's the clay. Still clay in the shape it made.
Thank you for listening, you amazing listeners. I want to thank my odd night tea titan Otto Star, the most amazing supporter and special pal of mine. May your days be full of joy. And a huge thank you to my white tea warlord's friends, Lizasaurus, my gym genius, Maya, my queen of cats, and Sangeetha, the seer that sees all. And to all my Earl Grey enforcers and tears, thereafter all my love to you all. See you soon. See you soon.